OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
UK Prime Minister Liz Truss reverses course on a tax plan that roiled markets.
Presenting economic packages is now a very, very sensitive matter. And you know, you can't do anything too radical, frankly. And that was Liz Truss's great error, was to try and be radical at a time when actually everyone wanted her to be sensible.
What happens next? And what the latest round of big bank earnings tells us about the broader economy. Plus, how spy gear goes from secret subject to museum exhibit. It's Friday, October 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Earnings season for big banks is underway. JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup today all reported higher revenue in the third quarter. But profits were down, in part because the three banks have set aside a combined $1.56 billion to cover possible future losses from loan defaults. Our banking reporter David Benoit has more on the bank's forecasts.
The banks are essentially saying the economy is strong for right now. We're not sure about the future. With the Fed raising interest rates, with the war in Ukraine, with a general slowdown expected in the economy, we're not quite sure what's coming. So we've got to be prepared. We're aware that consumers might dial back spending. We're aware that there will be other issues that we're going to face. And we think that that's probably brewing in the next year.
Shares of JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo each ended the day up more than 1.5%. Shares of Morgan Stanley were down more than 5%. Bank of America, the last of the big four, will report its earnings on Monday morning. U.S. stocks more broadly fell on the bank's earnings, with all three major indexes ending the day down. Meanwhile, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note closed above 4% for the first time since 2008. The major stock indexes ended the week mixed, with the Nasdaq dropping 3.1%, the S&P 500 shedding 1.6%, and the Dow eking out a gain of 1.2%. High inflation and rising interest rates kept retail spending flat in September. The Commerce Department says spending on goods like furniture, vehicles, groceries, and restaurants was largely unchanged from August, as consumers pulled back on big purchases like cars and TVs. Meanwhile, major retailers are rolling out holiday sales earlier than usual this year as they seek to unload excess inventory, but those efforts aren't reflected in the latest sales figures. A federal jury has found Nikola founder Trevor Milton guilty of securities fraud. Prosecutors had alleged he lied repeatedly about the company's zero-emissions trucks and technology. It's a remarkable downfall for the founder of a company that went public in 2020 at a valuation of $3.3 billion without having sold a single truck and briefly surpassed the valuation of industry giants like Ford. This morning, we told you how supermarket chains Kroger and Albertsons were in talks to combine, and now they've made it official. Kroger said it's buying Albertsons in a deal that values the company at $24.6 billion. That makes it one of the biggest deals ever in the U.S. grocery industry. The tie-up could give the two more leverage to compete against Walmart, the top U.S. grocery seller by sales, and Amazon, which has also expanded its food operations. Still, the merger is likely to get a close look from federal antitrust officials, and the companies say they expect to sell overlapping stores in order to win regulators' approval. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says subvariants of COVID-19's Omicron mutation are on the rise in the U.S. BQ1 and BQ1.1, as they're known, are estimated to account for just over 11% of U.S. COVID cases. The two subvariants are related to the BA5 version of Omicron, which is still dominant, causing 68% of cases. Virus experts say the latest bivalent booster should provide some protection against the new mutations, since it targets Omicron as well as the original strain. The U.S. has recently averaged about 330 newly reported COVID deaths per day, down from more than 2,500 a day during an Omicron wave earlier this year. Coming up, the UK rolls back a plan for major tax cuts, what it means for UK politics and economics. That's after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
UK Prime Minister Liz Truss is backtracking on more of her tax plan, which would have amounted to Britain's biggest tax cut since the 1970s, after a severe market backlash. As we previewed in this morning's show, pressure has been building on the government to pull back on the plan as the Bank of England ended its bond buying program to shore up markets. During a brief press conference today, Truss said it's still her mission to deliver a low-tax, high-wage, high-growth economy and ensure financial stability in the UK.
But it is clear that parts of our mini-budget went further and faster than markets were expecting. So the way we are delivering our mission right now has to change. We need to act now to reassure the markets of our fiscal discipline.
Joining me now with more on the reversal and what comes next is our UK correspondent, Max Colchester. Hi, Max. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
So, Max, there had been pressure on the government to reverse course, and we see now that it is rolling back key parts of the tax plan. What are the most significant changes being made now?
Well, there were two very significant changes made. The first was that Liz Truss went back on a plan to cut the UK corporate tax rate from 25% to 19%. Instead, it will rise, as was initially planned, to that level next year. And the second big thing was that she fired her Chancellor of the Exchequer, Kwasi Kwarteng, and replaced her with a moderate conservative lawmaker called Jeremy Hunt. And that's a move very much aimed at signaling both to the markets and to conservative lawmakers that she's ready to be less radical in her plan to kickstart growth in the UK economy.
And let's recap how this has been playing out in UK markets, which have been in some turmoil over the tax plan and steps being taken by the Bank of England, which seem to be working at odds with each other. What is the hope now or the expectation now that the government is reversing course on parts of this plan?
Well, the hope is that the markets calm down and that the interest rate on government debt starts to go back down towards the level it was at when this plan was announced back on September 23rd. But it doesn't look at the moment as if it's going to do that. Interest rates have gone down a little bit on that debt, but they are still well above the level the government was paying to borrow back at the tail end of September. And the projection for central bank interest rate rises remain quite high. So British people will be paying significantly more for their mortgages than they were before this so-called mini budget was announced.
What does this mean politically for Prime Minister Liz Truss? Can she regain support here?
It's looking increasingly difficult for Liz Truss to remain as Prime Minister. She gave a press conference this afternoon where she tried to explain why she was changing course, and it was a very unconvincing performance. It lasted 10 minutes. She answered very few questions. She was very wooden. And there was an immediate feeling within the Conservative Party that she didn't have the mojo anymore to lead the nation. So she's going to face a real challenge over the next few days to prove to her own lawmakers, effectively, that she is the person to lead the party.
And what are the risks to the UK economy over the next few days? Or are the political implications more significant or top of mind right now?
Well, it looks like the market reaction should calm down a little. But, you know, I think this now becomes a political story primarily, as lawmakers decide whether the policies that Liz Truss was championing are the right ones for the country and whether she still has credibility with the British electorate. Her popularity ratings are at record lows for a British leader. No one's ever seen a British prime minister with such a low approval rating before. And to be fair, elections aren't yet for another 2 years or so, but still, that is a pretty galling thing for a ruling party to swallow.
The UK, of course, isn't the only Western nation grappling with high inflation. What does what's happened over the past few weeks in the UK tell us more broadly about the challenges facing the global economy right now? What lessons can be learned?
I think the main lesson that we are learning in the UK, at least, is that in an era of high inflation and rising interest rates, politicians have to calibrate their economic messages much more carefully than they did in an era of low rates where investors were frankly grateful to buy any government debt with any positive yield on it. So I think that's the main message, is that for developed Western nations, presenting economic packages is now a very, very sensitive matter. And you can't do anything too radical, frankly. And that was Liz Truss's great error, was to try and be radical at a time when actually everyone wanted her to be sensible.
That's our UK correspondent, Max Colchester. Max, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
finally, after being closed for more than 2 years because of the pandemic, Washington, D.C.'s National Cryptologic Museum is opening its doors again. The Spy Museum's upgraded displays give a window into some of the nation's most tightly controlled secrets, filling them with retired technology which was used to generate U.S. nuclear codes from the 1980s up until just a few years ago. One of those machines makes the codes the U.S. presidents carry with them in the event they need to order a nuclear strike. The codes are printed on a card referred to as a biscuit. Our reporter Daniela Cheslow says over the years, this system led to some mishaps by former commanders-in-chief.
A nuclear arms expert told me that Jimmy Carter accidentally sent his to the dry cleaner in a suit jacket. Bill Clinton reportedly lost his biscuit. And when Ronald Reagan survived an assassination attempt in 1981, medics cut his clothes off and the FBI scooped his clothes up off the floor of the operating room at George Washington University Hospital in D.C. And then there was, according to this arms expert, a bit of a fight between the White House military office and the FBI over getting the biscuit back just in case Reagan had to order a nuclear strike while he was recovering.
And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Anthony Bansi and Kate Bullivant, with help from Mohsen Ali, Pierre Bien-Aimé, Julie Chang, Daniela Cheslow, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Michael Kosmides and Chris Sinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.